lots to catch up on this Monday morning. The Sports Machine with Slim. I've never been swept a day in my life. Those are the words of Bradley Beal on Friday night. I saw the Twitter post. I've never been swept a day in my life. I'll be damned if that happens. And I see a Twitter post this morning shared by the Minnesota Timberwolves account in response to that tweet. First time for everything. Nice troll job, Minnesota Timberwolves. I know we got Boston Bruins action going on. I know we got Boston Celtics action going on. It's playoff time in New England, baby, and it's a lot of fun. And we're going to talk about both teams plenty today. I just wanted to start the show with some Minnesota Timberwolves discussion because I know on these very airwaves, about 2 months ago, I didn't dial back to find the exact show, but my brother Dave and I were talking and said, Anthony Edwards is the closest thing to a young Michael Jordan that we've ever seen. Has definitely the best potential out of any player in the NBA. And I really think we're witnessing something incredibly special with Anthony Edwards right now. I said just within the last week or two, I don't think Minnesota's ready to go all the way. They won't be until Anthony Edwards can shoot threes. He needs to get in the gym this summer and just shoot threes because you can't always exert the level of energy that he puts out on the defensive end. Combine that with his need to create on the offensive end for his team and get to the rim and finish through contact, because I know he's coming. You can't always do those two things nonstop. Sometime you're going to get tired and you're going to be like, well, all right, I'm going to shoot a three this possession. Well, last night he shot 7 out of 13. From three-point land, had 40 points. And I'm just here to tell everybody, Minnesota Timberwolves are 11-1 to win it all. That is an absolute steal right now. Absolute steal. I know Denver is in their way. But here's the deal. There is no other team coming out of the Western Conference other than Denver and Minnesota. So I'll start out this show with the prediction, and I sound just as confident as I did when I said those words right there. I sounded like I did with that Miami-Chicago game when I said Chicago was definitely going to beat Miami in that play-in game. The tone, the actual, like, assuredness. It's a certainty. I feel that in my voice. But you're not – Oklahoma City is not going to beat Minnesota or Denver. It's one of those two teams is going to the Western Conference Finals, and one of, then they're going to win, right? Denver's going to match up with Minnesota in this next round if Denver can get by the Lakers, which they should, and I think they should do it tonight. That's the late game, right? The Lakers at Denver. Lakers did get game 4, so it's 3-1 in that series. But Minnesota, their defense is just flat-out different. Like, their defense is by far the best defense in the NBA. The only team that could potentially come anywhere close to them would be our Boston Celtics, because we have so much height and smart players, for the most part, on the defensive end, minus Jaylen Brown. I can go Boston Celtics right now. I could continue on the NBA. So many stories. How about Friday? Let me just open up my notebook to rewind this, because I'm sure nobody talked about it at all Saturday, Sunday. But Indiana, did you watch the Indiana Pacers play the Milwaukee Bucks Friday night? 2 times. Once at the end of regulation, once at the end of overtime. Indiana is up by 3. Milwaukee has the ball. In fact, in regulation, the Bucks had the ball down 3 with 6 seconds left out of bounds. What are you going to do when they pass the ball in bounds, Indiana? You foul. Obviously, Rick Carlisle is a smart coach. I've been singing his praises over the past month. He didn't want to coach Luka Doncic because Luka doesn't play defense. Oh, my God. Did you watch his defense yesterday? So pathetic. He had a blow-by rate of 80%. 10 out of 12 times, I think, guys that tried to go by him just went right by him. Ole. That Dallas cannot win the title. Like, I like their big guys. I like their attitude. They cannot win the title. You can't have a player who plays defense like that and win. You're just not going to. And Kyrie Irving, as hard as he's playing, that's great. He doesn't have the physical, like, ability on defense to stop guys from getting to the rim. He just doesn't have the size. But Indiana allows the Bucks to pass the ball into Chris Middleton, at the end of regulation, he rises up, makes a three. Now we're going to overtime. And I'm sitting there like, Coach, what are you doing? How could you let that happen? And it gets worse from there. With at the end of overtime, Aaron Nesmith, boy, he is a heck of a player. I like him. He hustles. Now, he was only 3-for-13 in the game on Friday night, but he nailed a three with 15 seconds left to put Indiana up 118-115 in overtime. They don't foul again. Milwaukee comes down, and Middleton banks in a three with 7 seconds left. Are you kidding me, Rick Carlisle? I'm not going to call you names. I'm not going to call you names, pal, but you might call the show. I'll walk you through it. I'll hold your hand and put you in a safe space and walk you through what you do when you're up by three and the other team has the ball with under 10 seconds left. With 15 seconds left, you do not allow them to shoot a three-pointer. A two can't beat you. Going to the free throw line, they're not going to get the rebounds. You have four guys in there. They have two. Halliburton makes a runner, gets fouled with 1.5 seconds left, and Indiana wins. Halliburton bails him out. Don't let that guy get too hot. Indiana's dangerous in the East. No doubt about that. But Milwaukee, they're a shell of themselves. Bobby Portis got thrown out of that game. That guy's a hothead. Sorry, dude. See you later. And Giannis and Dame Lillard didn't even play. So how much credit can we give Indiana? I love their togetherness, though, the way they play. Aaron Nesmith, man, if he plays the Celtics, I'm going to be scared because that cat just goes off against us. It's like every time we play, he's making all these shots. I watch him play all these other games. He misses. He's terrible. So what's the common theme? He wants to beat the Celtics. He's just in like a different zone. And that's how you get in sports. You want to hit that mental plane. And this morning, as I just switch over to NHL, which we're going to do segment two, Thomas Poke will be calling in with the Boston Bruins. On my drive-in this morning, I'm listening to WEEI. Andrew Raycroft is on with Greg Hill, and they're talking back and forth, and we bring up the rotation, of course, and Raycroft is like, well, see, the rotation people are just mad because they were wrong. And this is exactly the wrong type of thinking, Raycroft, if I could just call you out. Like, I know you're an athlete, so your intelligence level probably caps out at a certain point, okay? You weren't paid to be a professor or a philanthropist or a thinker. Let's just say that. You were paid to go and play. And now you're in a job where you have to think. If Omar had started game four and we won, I wouldn't be sitting here going, see, the rotation definitely works. The fact that Swayman played in game four and the Bruins responded, I think it's great. I think it's a fantastic thing. I think Swayman should start game five too. He's hot. You made the call. Put him in there for game four. You stopped the rotation. Fine. It worked out. I'm glad. That's what I want. I'm trusting in Jim Montgomery to make those decisions. But you've added an element into the mix now of like second guessing in my world. I just feel that, but I don't even want to second guess. I just want to root for the team. But I'm not here to kick me down or anybody else who says, hey, we should have stuck with the goalie rotation, because I believe if Linus Ullmark started in game four, we would have won too. You're not right, because Swayman got the win. Like, if Linus Ullmark started, we would have won too. What's the common denominator in this series? It's 3-1. The Bruins are winning. And what a world of difference we've had, huh, since we since the end of game two, when Ullmark was incredible in net. What's the common theme? One, you could say, well, Linus Ullmark was in game two. That's the only game the Bruins lost. How about Austin Matthews was unbelievable in one game? That was game two. Like, that game-winning shot, I got news for you. Jeremy Swayman wasn't stopping that shot that Austin Matthews put in at the game end of game two. That one game by him, he won single-handedly. He was everywhere. He had so many good shot attempts. He had three or four that definitely could have been goals. Guess what? Linus Ullmark stopped those other three or four. But the last one, no. And we lose the game. So I'm all about the chemistry. I'm all in trust in Monty. Jim Montgomery, you're the man I want making the decisions. You're making the right ones. Let's rock and roll. My assumption is you have to start Jeremy Swayman in game five. I'm all for it. And then we go back to the next series. Swayman game one, Allmark game two. I'm going back into a little bit of a rotation and evaluate from there. Let's evaluate how the sports machine with Slim has started off this Monday morning. Think about that during this commercial break. WKXL Radio is on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, New Hampshire, 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire. You can catch us live or anything download from the past. We got past copies you can catch there too. NHTalkRadio.com. Favorite ex-NHL player in the entire world is going to join us on the phone lines this morning, Thomas Polk. He of former New York Rangers and New York Islanders fame. Welcome to you on a Monday, Thomas.
Thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
I always start out asking you questions or giving my comments. I wonder, how would you like to frame the discussion today if I said you come up with something to start this segment? What would you want to talk about?
I mean, we can talk a little bit about a couple of the games from last night. Obviously, the Rangers closed Washington out, which wasn't much of a surprise, I think. I think Washington worked really, really hard to get into the playoffs, but then with a little luck or unluck in their case, they were just running out of players. You can't be winning against the number one seed in the East in the playoffs with four or five defensemen that have only played a couple of games. It's just the way it goes. And obviously some of the other teams, Colorado went pretty hard on Winnipeg and beat them 5-1. And then obviously the crazy game up in Vancouver, where I thought Nashville kind of, they gave it away. And that's a big dagger for them. I mean, they were right there.
Yeah, I'm going
to... I think it was six seconds to go, right? Where they tied it up. It was just a matter of time and overtime at that point. You're winning 3-1. And then you give up two goals in the last 2 minutes for them to tie it. And the series goes up 3-1 to Vancouver. Now going home, able to close it out.
Really just insane, that series of events last night, Thomas. And it was sheer luck. There was a break in a basketball game, or it went to halftime. I said, well, what else is on? Oh, yeah, I got to go over. I'll get back to that hockey game. At the time I switch over, there's like 3 minutes left, 3 minutes and change, and Vancouver is leading by two goals, okay? And Vancouver's leading the series 2-1 over Nashville at this point. This is game four, and we're in Nashville. Vancouver's up by two goals. Get down to like 2 minutes, 50 seconds left, and the other way around. Nashville was leading. You could jump in there and cut me off. Yeah, Nashville was up by two goals. So Vancouver scores a goal with like 2 minutes, 45 seconds left. So now they're only down by one. Eventually, with 2 minutes left, they pull their goalie, and Nashville has a chance on a backhand. The net's wide open. The guy shoots off the post, and you can just hear all the air in that stadium just go, oh! So Vancouver gets the puck. They go down. They end up tying the game up with, I think it was 6 seconds left, Thomas, and then they win it like a minute into overtime. Unbelievable. Vancouver comes back.
You don't see that a lot. I believe both the goals, the second for Vancouver, Brock Besser, was his second of the night. That was the goalie pulled when they put that puck in the net. That was a backdoor play. So that his second goal, second for Vancouver, goalie pulled, and then they pulled the goalie again. Obviously got a little lucky that it didn't go in. But at the end of the day, like, it's 6 seconds. You should be able to not give them that kind of chance. I mean, the puck was going out to the right point. I believe it was Quinn Hughes. And I know he is a shifty little defenseman, but as a forward, you can't be running at him that fast and he just goes around you like you're a cone, brings the puck to the net. At that point, let him have it out there.
It was really
always
sad.
As I say, it's tough. And then at the end, you saw it. Brock Besser missed the puck, hit the outside of the net, pulled it back to the front, shot it, and I believe it hit either the goalie or one of the national guys' stick to go into the net. At that point, you already knew what was coming in the play. In overtime, you just knew they were going to win it. And then again, a little breakdown, you leave that guy on the power play wide open in front of the net. He wasn't going to miss that one.
No, right in front of the net, literally, like 5 feet on the doorstep, boom. And the goalie was off to the side of the net, so he had the whole other side to shoot it into.
Like mentally, momentum shift, that was a huge game for Vancouver. I mean, now instead of 2-2 going back home, you're up 3-1 knowing, hey, we can end this today. So very, very hard, tough mentally, I think, for Nashville to come back from that one.
The mental side of it is what came to my mind, Thomas, as I was watching that game. Like, wow, hockey is such a game of literally like an inch. It's not inches. It's an inch difference. That puck that went off the goalpost for Nashville, it's 2-2. You got to think, as a hockey player, you play an 82-game season. You're all season long, and you get to this point at the end, so much work, so much physicality, taking checks, putting your body on the line nonstop. You're right at the point of, like, we're in this thing. Let's come back. We got the momentum, and it all evaporates. And that has to have, like, so much of that comes from a mindset just within the team. Like, guys, we feel good. We feel like good breaks are going to happen. We're going to win. Or somewhere just like, man, I'm mad I'm not playing. Or there's just some negativity. And that I translate over to the Boston Bruins, Thomas. And I just think there's no negativity. We're going to have good stuff happening.
No, I agree with you. I mean, if we look back at the last game up in Toronto, and you can see their fans, all right, they didn't have Willie Nylander, who played 82 games. And then the first three games, he was not there, right? Now, Austin Matthews, is it in their head? Are they already with one foot out the door kind of thinking, oh, it's not going to happen again for us this year? For this group that they have together with all the offensive power, what is it, 7 years in a row, that they can't win a playoff? I know they won one last year, but then lost in the second round. But every time, it's got to be in their head. There's no way, you know, they are human too. So we'll see how they do, but the Bees are strong. You know, they went after it. Arguably, Toronto might have a little more offensive talent, but so far with the way the Bruins been playing, I don't see a reason why they wouldn't come home and just stomp on them and finish the series out.
Let's hope we can do it. I mean, we were up 3-1 last year against Florida, so nobody this year is overconfident. We're still worried. I will say the Toronto fan base on Twitter, they're begging for this series to be over. Like, their big account fans, tons of them, get comments on, likes for their posts and stuff. They're big content producers on Twitter for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're like, I want the season over. I want to fire everybody. I don't want any more pain. I'm sick of this. I want to turn the corner, clean house. Let's get it over. It's so great to see just the capitulation of all their fans, because they're supposed to be hardcore fans up there in Toronto.
No, they are. It's hockey town up there. But, you know, that's how it goes. They have been stars for some wins in the playoffs for a very, very, very long time. The stat I texted you about, it popped up on the TV screen last. Since 2006, they have won one playoff series. And I know that cup goes way back, but that's for a team that's arguably spending the max every year since the cap era, and they just can't get it done. So, yeah, I mean, what's going to definitely happen up there? I mean, that's not even me knowing any insights. You're losing again. That coach is most likely out of there.
Oh, he's got to be
the
gone.
GM, yeah, there is no other way. And at the end of the day, they're probably going to rethink their situation. They've been trying to do this with paying four star forwards that kind of money and wondering why your DN, your goalie aren't able to play better. Well, there's just not enough money left. Like, if you compare them to our Bruins set up, right? We have Pastrnak, who is a high-end forward who's getting paid like one of those four guys. But then the next guy in line for us, when you look at Marchand, who's playing, by the way, better than all four of them up there, no questions asked, is making half their money. That's where we have the ability to have multiple defensemen making money and having a good overall team. I mean, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs and I'm the GM up there, I'm calling the Bruins. I'm trying to get Allmark for next year.
Yeah.
That's my first move.
There you go, right, getting a better goalie would help. I would say one account on Twitter for Toronto, and this has 21,000 followers, the tweet he wrote this morning. One more sleep till the D-Day handshake line. I'm so stoked. they can't wait for the pain to get over. So let's just take care of business tomorrow night, Bruins fans. It's time, and then we move on. Thomas, I saw Tampa Bay won game four of that series, so Florida's up 3-1. Any chance that Tampa Bay might be able to pull out a game five victory and really make Florida start to think about this?
I think it's going to be a hard-fought game. I think a big thing's going to be if Florida can come out and score a couple of goals early. Right at that point, you get a couple goal lead in that game to close the series, the energy might leave the Bills. Tampa comes out and they score the first couple, they will have a game and it'll be tight. it'll be a tough one overall. I think I saw a statistic. They only had a, after they went down 3-0 in the series, they only had a 2% chance of winning that series. So it does happen, but it doesn't happen a lot. I think Florida, the Panthers are a stronger team. They're the more physical team. I think they're going to close the series.
Well, I will say, I'm going to respect your opinion, because I remember at the Rangers-Washington series at the beginning, I said, Washington's going to give them a battle. They're hot. They were hot getting into the playoffs. Everything's moving the right direction. You said, nah, I think the Rangers are going to be a little too much for them. Well, the Rangers won that 4-0. The Rangers, I do feel, are the favorite, Thomas, in all of hockey right now. Who would you say is the most likely winner of the Stanley Cup at this point?
Well, I picked the Bruins at the beginning, and I'm still going to go with it.
Bam.
I had the Avalanche on the other side in the finals for them. Always like the Avs. I think they have a really strong team, and their star players are always on in the playoffs, and you can see it now. Kale McCarr, I think he's at 8 points in 4 games as a D. So they're kicking out there. So that's my thing, and I'm going to stick to it. Obviously, Bruins going to close this one out first. They will have a battle with Florida in the second round, and I think that's the only negative for us and even the Panthers, whoever moves on after, how hard fought those games are. I mean, even though we're leading Toronto 3-1, those were tough games on the body for the players, right? I can assure you the next one's going to be exactly the same. Toronto's not going to go down quietly. Whether their fans want them to end it, the players itself don't want to do that, right? They're going to come out and they're going to leave it all out there.
Right,
so that'll be another hard game.
That's the way to do it.
Well, we'll see.
Let's see. Let's go, Bruins. We'll be back after this commercial to talk some Boston Celtics here on the Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Tell you something, I'm not on my game this morning. Disappointing. For one thing, I screwed up that Vancouver-Nashville story. For another thing, I'll tell you, as I comment, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, here on the radio, in my regular life, why do I always like interchange Edmonton and Vancouver? Well, I think they're the same team. Like, I don't know, they're just so far away in north and west of where I am. Vancouver and Edmonton, they just morph into one thing for me, but they're both actually separate teams and both pretty darn good. But one thing I wrote down in my notebook Friday night, it was different about this Vancouver-Nashville series, right? Is it wasn't the point that they came back in the game. It was Friday night, Vancouver led their game 2-0. With 8 minutes left. And I noticed that the shot total, this game was at Nashville, the shot total was 23-11. Nashville had 23 shots, 0 goals. Vancouver had 11 shots, 2 goals. And all I'm going to say is, like, I know Vancouver has the thought of, like, okay, they're like high offense, they're a real good team. The Bruins will never play a game where there's 8 minutes left and we only have 11 shots on goal. That's just never going to happen, ever. Now, I know Thomas Lane had said he wanted to call today to talk some Boston Celtics stuff, but I don't think he's on the line, so I'm just going to go right ahead and start doing it myself. How about that game Saturday? I will say I didn't get to watch as much of it as I would have liked because the Bruins were on at some point, and I was at the casino playing blackjack with some friends, and we had a good time. But the Celtics just came in and completely stomped on the hearts of the diminished or less than full strength Miami Heat and their fan base, who we know is weak to begin with. The Celtics came out with a defensive effort that was right where it needed to be. I think with 6 minutes left in the first quarter, I was watching the game and said, wow, Miami only has like 8 points. But at that time, the Celtics only had like 13 or 14. Even if you fast forwarded a couple minutes later, I think with 3 minutes left, Miami only had about 12 points, but the Celts only had 18. I'm like, wait a second here. wait a second, like, we came out with the right defensive intensity, but we only have a 6-point lead. This is no good. 12 points given up through 9 minutes. You want to start to beat the team down. You want to feel like you're creating more of a margin than that. Well, it didn't let up, Celtics fans. And I will say, if I had teed up, I planned to do this, and I forgot. I didn't do it. The show closed on Friday with my brother Dave calling in, and I said, hey, what do you think? What's a good pick for over the weekend? He said, I predict that the Celtics Heat game is going to be real low scoring. I think that's an under game. That game could be played in the 80s. Well, in the end, I think Miami Heat only scored 84. So my brother Dave getting back in the win column there, Pistol, in case you're still counting at home. Tom Lane, are you on the line right now?
Yes, actually, for the second time, Clem, I called once and didn't get through, I guess. But here I go again.
Here you go again. Yeah, I'm doing A-OK. We probably got about 5 minutes or so that I'm going to let you take as much control of the show as you want. Do you have anything that you think of from the past? For people that don't know, Tom Lane here is on the line. He's called a few times over the past month. Over 80 years old. Is that right, Tom? It sounds very old when I say it.
Sounds quite old to me, yeah. I can't quite believe it myself, but yeah, if you get down to facts, I'm older than the NBA itself.
You're the man. That tells us we have lots of history because you've been following the NBA for lots of years. You're a hardcore Celtics fan. What did you think about that effort on Saturday night?
I've written a couple of things on offensive rebounds. They have to rebound, get more action off the offensive boards, number one. And Tatum and Brown have to up their assists. In game one, they won the game. The J team, Brown and Tatum, combined for 13 assists. Tatum had 10. Game two, they lost. Celtics lost. Brown and Tatum combined for 4 assists only. Game three, win for Boston. That duo had 9 assists. Now, offensive boards, meaning easy hoops.
Yeah.
Game one, Celtics won. 10 boards, 10 offensive boards, okay, for the team, entire team. Game two, they lost. Celtics lost. 6 offensive boards only. Game three, Celtics won. 10 offensive boards. I think it's a key. When Brown and Tatum take the ball in, they're kicking it out now, okay? Which is what they're supposed to be doing. They're not forcing the offense in the wins. I think they're forcing it a bit in the one loss. So that's a point I made in my articles before the games, and now it looks like it's actually come true.
Nice work, Tom. Yeah, for people that don't know, on Twitter, you can find Tom's stuff on Celtics Sentinel. He does write-ups before games, after games, and has some guest people come in every now and then. I've written up a few columns for him. I will say there was one play I saw replayed on Twitter. Somebody posted it out there, Tom. An offensive rebound by Peyton Pritchard during that game three, where he was at the top of the key. Somebody shot from the corner. Pritch just like slowly right down into position, grabs the rebound amongst like 3 Heat guys, all taller than him. He just times the bounce and the leap correctly, comes down with the rebound, dribbles one over and he just to the other side of the basket and finishes the putback. That's effort. Pritchard plays with effort all the time. And when you talk about these 10 offensive rebounds in the games we win versus 6 in the ones we lose, that has to come back on some level to pure effort.
Yeah, pure effort, definitely. But it has to do also with his small size. Okay, 6'1". He's not visible to the taller players. They're looking around like, who's going to fight for this rebound from the opponent? And Pritchard, with his effort, and at only 6'1", he's able to, they don't block him out. They don't block him out. And he gets a lot of offensive boards, particularly for a 6'1 guy. I love the kid.
We all do. Basketball purists love Peyton Pritchard because he just plays the right way. Everybody says that. It's like he goes after that offensive rebound. And nowadays, game, Tom, how many players are just sitting out there by that 3-point line where Peyton Pritchard was at the beginning of the play and just watching to see if it goes in from the corner 3 shot from the guy on your team? 90% of NBA players. It might be 95. Just stand there, and they don't even try to get that offensive rebound.
Well, players no longer follow their shot. Remember, you know, when you're taught to play the game, you look, if you hoist the shot, you're supposed to follow that shot up by running to the hoop. If, in other words, in case of a miss, you're going to get your own miss. You're going to get your own offensive rebound, but you don't see much of that. One thing I will say quickly, I know I get maybe a minute at most, Tatum's doing his job. He leads in the three games so far, he leads the team in points, rebounds, assists, and minutes. The guy is doing his job, okay? And Brown, frankly, is doing okay. 24 points, 8 rebounds, 2.3 assists, a little more than one steal, a little bit more than one block a game. The kid's doing okay.
I'm not going to give Brown too much credit yet, Tom, because he's being guarded by Tyler Hero. So when you go out and you're like, oh, you're guarding me, well, I'm 2 inches, 3 inches bigger than you and 30 pounds of muscle bigger than you. Like, Jaylen Brown should be able to cook that guy.
Well, if you remember in game two, it was Hero that cooked the Celtics. And 14 assists. And what was it, 24 points? I mean, come on.
Just
so they
effort.
Should take this game. And they should take this game.
Well, Jason Tatum, what I will say, Tom, it's a great point by you, is, and nobody's really talking about it yet, but his defensive mindset, you can just see the effort. It's there from Tatum. Tatum, and during the season, we wanted him to be more of a playmaker. Remember during the first periods, a lot of time during this season, Tom, Tatum didn't come out shooting like at all for the first 6-7 minutes. He would go to the bench with 2 points, 4 points, while Jaylen Brown was lighting things up, and then he'd come back and he'd score when Brown went to the bench. So they worked on Tatum's playmaking skills, and like, we kind of need that in the playoffs here, so I'm glad to see it. We got 20 seconds left. What do you think?
Well, the three games so far have been decisive for the winner. I'm looking at, obviously, a Celtics win tonight.
Tonight.
So I'm looking at a Celtics win tonight. I don't see by a large margin, but that remains to be seen.
We're all watching, and we're all staying tuned for segment four of this show to see if I can get my act together. For a second there, I thought the Celtics play tomorrow and the Bruins tonight. No, it's the Celtics tonight and the Bruins tomorrow. We're ready to watch the Celtics beat down the Miami Heat again this evening. You're listening to The Sports Machine with Slim. We've got more when we return here on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. This is New Hampshire Talk Radio. Tom Lane, thanks for calling the show. I really like listening to that guy. He's got his ideas together better than me today. Definitely. Got some statistics. Things to look out for. The offensive rebounding side of things seems to be somewhat key. Does signify effort. I always equate offensive rebounds with effort. Got to go after the ball. We've got to want the ball more than the other teams. That simple. Let's go, Celtics. You do that, Miami can't beat you. They don't have their best player. Like, I'm not saying they can't win a game or two. They could win tonight. Miami could win tonight. But they can't beat you 4 out of 7. They can't. Same as Orlando and Cleveland can't beat the Celtics 4 out of 7. It's just not possible. I will say, everybody, we're rooting for Orlando, okay, to beat Cleveland. Why is that? Well, one, because you want the underdog. Now, they play tomorrow night. But Orlando was down 2-0 to start. They go back to Orlando and boom. They win two games. Well, I reached out because I think Orlando's going to win that series. I like Orlando's team. I love Franz Wagner. Really big fan of him. And Jalen Suggs, too. Jalen Suggs, I was all in on coming out of college, Gonzaga. He's taken a few years, as point guards typically do. I'm hoping he puts it all together. He had a big game the other night. Him and Anthony Edwards. I said, hey, Jalen Suggs, he's not really ready for prime time. So I don't like Orlando's chances until he is. Well, maybe he's ready for prime time. And Anthony Edwards is draining threes. So those are my two key guys, really. I do think Orlando's going to beat Cleveland. Well, I've got an Orlando Sports Talk radio show host down there. I reached out to on Twitter yesterday and said, hey, man, I think you guys are going to beat Cleveland. So the Celtics will play Orlando next round. Do you want to come on and be a guest on the show to talk about the Orlando side? I'd love to. Reach out to me after we win the next two. That's what he said to me. I was like, yeah, dude, that's the confidence I'm looking for. Let's go, Orlando. Take down that team of frauds, Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland. Let's go. That'd be fantastic. I want to have back and forth with the sports talk show from these other regions, and I'm going to try like heck to do it in the NHL. I tried with Toronto for the Bruins-Toronto series. Everybody, I went after. I almost had the guy who does the pre- and post-game on TV up there. I don't know if I told you this on the air or not, but I reached out to him through LinkedIn because on LinkedIn, I'm kind of a big deal. I have a lot of connections and stuff. So I reached out to this guy, said, hey, you know, I'd like to have you on my show. And he says, yeah, cool. I said, hey, great. It'll be great to have some trash talk back and forth during the series. And he says, wait a minute. No, I've reconsidered. I don't want to do this. I don't do trash talk. And I said back, well, I can understand. It's probably not too much fun to do trash talk when you know your team's going to lose. I was like, just a little unprofessional back. And then he sent me back a more negative one. And I said, hey, it's all in good fun. And that was the end of it. And now we're winning 3-1. Loser. You should have been on the show. Would have been a lot more fun for you because I wouldn't have been so nasty calling you a loser. Right now, I would have been, hey, thanks for coming on the show. But I tried with a handful of other people in Toronto, no engagement. Toronto fans just kind of, they were looking to quit on their team. That's just the end story. But a team like Orlando, now they're going to be like, yeah, they're going to be feeling their royal oats or whatever it is, going to try and knock off the Celtics as a huge underdog. And I do like Orlando's team, but they just can't beat the Celtics 4 out of 7. So then we're moving forward from there. Who's going to be on the other side? New York Knicks, dude. New York Knicks. What Joel Embiid did to Mitchell Robinson there in game 2, I'm sorry, when he went up to shoot and he just grabbed and took out his legs, I'm sorry, that's just a loser move. Like, you can't do that. And I've always liked Joel Embiid. You can't do that. You weren't in danger afterwards. Like, well, I remember earlier in the season when the guy from Golden State, when he jumped on my leg there and, you know, I was out, I was protecting myself. Like, no, dude, you were trying to hurt the guy because you were mad. That's what, but you could say, oh, I didn't try to hurt him. Well, what do you think you do when you're grabbing a guy's ankle when he jumps up in the air and pull? What are you trying to do? You're not trying to hurt him. You're not trying to be nice to him. You're trying to hurt the guy. You're just out of control. And then afterwards, oh, well, my brain, I didn't try to hurt him. Yes, you did, dude. And now you're down 3-1, and I'm glad. Why? Because Jalen Brunson, who is a bad man, scored 47 points on your team. Now you're on the brink of elimination, and best of all, in your Philadelphia stadium where there's supposed to be such great fans in Philadelphia, like half of the stadium was the New York Knicks. And I think I'm going to play tomorrow a clip I saw with Joel Embiid postgame saying, yeah, it's not okay. I was disappointed in our fans and this and that because we have so many Knicks fans coming in that they're leading the cheers and the chants. Ha! Well, that's what you get when you try to hurt guys, dude. Bad things. Bad things come into your life when you do bad things. And now you're going to be going home. And I'm glad. Let's go, Jalen Brunson. And then they'll move on. The Knicks will play Indiana. And then I just think that the Knicks have everything going right now for them. And Jalen Brunson in any game can score 40, especially against Indiana. They give up 40. Like they don't play the best D. Although I do think that they're playing a little bit better now, but the Knicks just have that thing going, and we're gonna face the Knicks in the conference finals. It's Celtics, Knicks, and on the other side, I mean, it's got to be Oklahoma City, I guess. But I'm gonna take Minnesota. I'm taking Minnesota to beat Denver because Minnesota's defense is just better than everybody's. And I will tell you right now, I'm a little scared if the Celtics play Minnesota. We're gonna need our defense. We're gonna need to be the second best defensive team in the NBA to beat Minnesota. Because whoever Anthony Edwards guards, they're not scoring. Jaylen Brown, you're not scoring against Anthony Edwards. You're just not. You'll be lucky to score 12 points if Anthony Edwards is guarding you. And Tatum, you're not going to score a ton either. But he could at least play make at the very least. I want to read something real quick. We're starting to wind down the show 5 minutes or so. But a real cool article I saw on Fox News today. People know Mike Tyson's getting ready to fight again. Do you know this? He's 57. I know you were asking yourself, how old is this? He's 57 years old, and he's putting out videos on Twitter, like punching the bag, and he looks like, you know, like he was still 20-something years old just with his punches. You definitely do not want to take any punch from Mike Tyson. There's no doubt about that. But he's 57, and he's going to get tired. And add into this, the title of this, Mike Tyson reveals he's holding out on sex and weed ahead of Jake Paul fight. Mike Tyson is putting on muscle, showing off speed, and giving up sex and marijuana ahead of his July 20th fight against YouTuber turned boxer Jake Paul. Jake Paul is a big dude, just so everybody knows, and he's been beating up people, smaller people than him, and ex-fighters, older people, and stuff like that, so he hasn't really fought anybody who's been at the top of their game, and he's not gonna with Mike Tyson either, but he's putting on a show, and I'm sure it's going to get a ton of pay-per-view draws, no doubt about that, but apparently, the 57-year-old Tyson recently said he had not smoked or had sex in more than 2 weeks. Right now, I'm living my life disciplined. It's been 6 weeks that I haven't gotten high or had sex, he told the outlet in a story published Saturday. I haven't done that since I was a little kid. I hate not being able to smoke, but I'm doing it like I love it. I hate not being able to sleep with my wife, but I'm doing it like I love it. Mike Tyson is hardcore training, and he's putting out the right type of stuff here, right? The marketing side of things. We still got 2 months until that fight happens, and he's talking like this. So many people are going to be like, Tyson, yeah, Tyson. If you can bet on this fight, you bet Jake Paul all day long and twice on Sunday. Mike Tyson is 57 years old, and he just told you, I don't care how long you've been taking off, he's been smoking his whole life. Dude, he is going to be so gassed after like 2 minutes. Jake Paul, who's huge, you just need to be able to cover up. I mean, you're going to take hits. You're going to get hurt. There's no doubt about it. But you got a big-time reach advantage. Just stay on your feet. I'm not saying I could do it. I don't have the power, the punching power that Jake Paul does. I am not saying I could do this. I'm just, as a coach, my strategy would be, dude, just try and hang in there for a round. Because eventually, Tyson's just going to be all done. And then he's going to come out and he's going to start throwing absolute haymakers, and then you can nail him with one or two. God forbid if it goes into the third or fourth round, Tyson's going to be on his knees. There's no way he's going to beat this guy. Jake Paul he's 30 years old. He's going to be ready. He's not out there smoking and doing all this other stuff, I'll tell you that. There's no way he's taking this as a joke. This is a huge fight. You win this fight, and all of a sudden, everybody's talking about you way more. If you lose, you're a total laughingstock. You lost to a 57-year-old guy who hasn't been doing nothing. Yeah, it's Mike Tyson, maybe the greatest fighter of all time, but that's 30 years ago. 20-something anyway. He's ready. My random spinning wheel. Kentucky Derby's coming up. I know my horse, I got a couple of them. Fierceness is out of the 16-hole. Resilience. Bill Mott trained out of the 19-hole. We're going to have a lot of Kentucky Derby discussion here this week, just so everybody knows. That's a wicked popular event for everybody. More and more growing now in the younger generation. And the Belmont Stakes is coming up in Saratoga in, 5 weeks and change. But I think the 19 horse, Resilience, is most likely going to be my pick. Speaking of picks, Gerard Mayo is pick of the head coach for the New England Patriots. I say great move. I listened to an interview with him. I'm on board. So many things to cover. We could have done 8 hours today. Worked in 20 callers. But we'll save some of that for tomorrow. Let's talk about the Celtics win tomorrow on the show and preview the Boston Bruins game tomorrow night. Hopefully they will close out the series against Toronto. The Sports Machine with Slim coming to you on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com.